It's Wednesday, November 24th, 2021, and you're listening to episode 583 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
I'm still Brodor.
All right.
I stole your thing, dude.
I don't care. So, Brodor, you went to GameholeCon.
I did. And I have to tell you, and I actually posed this question to a number of people who had been to multiple GameholeCons. But keep in mind that this was only GameholeCon 8. And it was unbelievable to me the quality of special guest, the quality of vendor, the quality of game production relative to the small amount of people that were there.
So what you're saying is this con is terrible. Please don't go to it.
No,
ever. Don't ruin this con for us.
So I had asked, including to Alex, the executive director of the convention, I'm like, so this is either A, the best kept secret in the hobby industry for people who are into tabletop and board games, or it's the tabletop RPG industry's Bohemian Grove.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure. I'm leaning about 60-40, but it turns out after doing
some... In
which
direction?
Bohemian Grove.
I mean, look who you're talking to.
Yeah, precisely.
I needed it spelled out.
No, there's all sorts of weird and drugs and ritual
and
magic going on.
And gold.
Eating babies in gold foil. No, for sure. It was... I mean, that's Bilderberg's, the baby eating or mixing our conspiracies. Yeah. But any which way, it was an amazing
show. Bilderberg's game.
Maybe they are game. I think they do. I think that the kind of gaming that they do, though, is...
They're big into deck builder.
Jesus Christ.
I wonder who the wealthiest person is on the planet who plays tabletop role-playing
games.
I would guess Elon Musk probably does. Elon Musk, he probably doesn't talk about it. He's got to have thrown some dice in a D&D game at some point.
Bill
Gates.
Does Bill Gates currently play D&D? Or any role-playing game?
I'm telling
you. Or does this
If you've seen weird movies like Hostel, or if you've seen odd movies where they buy human beings, Bill Gates is an entire island where they do like Arpex, right? The role-playing experience. It's live dungeon, not true dungeon. It's people living out this dungeon experience. It's amazing. But that's what Bill Gates does with live actual human beings and human-animal hybrid chimeras that he has made in his Moreau lab. Sure. It's real life.
You know what Bill Gates' actual game is? Poker. I have read he is an almost champion-level poker player. Or at least he was in like the 80s and 90s. I don't know if he still plays it.
I guess stealing from others and selling it as your own gives you the opportunity to tell who is legit and is not lying.
He was a legit programmer too, and math and
poker. Like, okay, I know how, right?
Yeah.
And my issue with I don't like Texas Hold'em for five card draw aside. It's not that. The reason, like, when I'm in a casino, I cannot play poker is because the idea of taking the house's money doesn't bother me. The idea of taking someone else's money does. Mm-hmm.
And if it's like pennies or matchsticks, who cares?
Right. But I'm talking about like
world system.
And I don't care if it's like a $5 or $10 ante, right? Yeah. It can be low stakes poker. It's the idea that I'm not taking from the house. I'm taking from this individual next to me that I don't know anything about and have nothing against. I can't do it.
That person sat down at that table and they put their money and their skill and their ability to read other human beings against yours, and you dry rail them in the shitter. That person.
All right. So let me tell you how deep this neurosis goes. When I'm playing blackjack, if instead of paying me out of their own stack, the house dealer, like, let's say the person next to me loses and I win the hand, they just take their chips and move it over to me. I push them back.
Wow.
Like, I cannot take it. Like, seriously, that is how controlling my empathy is. And I'm not making this up. This is not show persona or whatever.
When two people...
John Grana can tell you, because he's gone gambling with me, I really do this. They put winnings in front of me, and if it came from the dealer, I keep it. If it came from the person next to me, I push it back. I can't take it.
That's bizarre.
It is. It's totally my damage.
Yeah, it's not an advantage.
No. And this is not advice. What Brodor's saying is
moral high standing thing. Yeah, it's a nerd, like
what Brodor's saying is true, because I only play low stakes. So it's not like anyone's got the deed of their house on the table.
Right.
I mean, I play like $5 hands. So it's not like Brodor's wrong, because he's not. That these people sit down at the table knowing how it works and so on and so forth. But it's just the way I'm wired, that I cannot look at someone who's not an employee, right? Because an employee, I'm not playing for their paycheck.
No.
I'm playing for the house's money, which is probably organized crime or whatever crap anyway. I'm happy to take their money. As a pastor once said, I'm happy to use the devil's money for the Lord's work. And, you know, it's that sort of thing. But the moment you hand me another human being, like regular person's money, I can't accept it.
I don't gamble. I'm too cheap.
I don't gamble because I'm bad at it. But I don't understand, like, you gamble and I don't. And I have the right attitude and yours is wrong.
Oh, I know. Well, that's why you have to get, if John Grant ever shows up again, we'll get him to. Yeah, exactly. We'll get him to.
Did he? He's the guy. He wrote Blood Moon Goblins.
Yeah, and I see him about once every 6 months. And anyway, so Game Hole Con was great.
It was amazing. It really was.
What is the attendance again?
About five people.
It's terrible. Don't go to it.
It's about 4,000 to 4,500 people.
Okay,
which means if you do the math, 1 in 100 people is a special guest, and I don't mean like small names. There are some big names that show up at that show. Was really, really very cool. Now, it's got some things about it that I did not care for, like the availability of amenities, particularly food. They had some food trucks, but if you wanted to get something different, you had to take an Uber downtown, but it was like $9.
And you can't rely on a food truck thing either. I mean, there might be weather, something breaks down, or they're like, oh, hey, you know what? There's a baseball game. We're going to make 10 times what we can make here. We're out.
Yeah, or even if they're there, it might be a line around the building.
Right. But the vendors, the special guests,
I love
gaming, the True Dungeon and Live Dungeon. It was awesome. There was so much packed and it was like a gusher, right? It was just this, you know, tiny piece of gum with all this that just came out of it. It was great.
Very That's proud of you. You went with gum.
I was going to say, I was like, here we go again. Another negative episode. All right. Yeah. So what we are going to talk about today, other than this, to try and get things a little back on topic here.
How much I'm jealous of your shirt, because that shirt is awesome, Dan.
Oh, thank you.
It is amazing.
Actually, my mom got me this shirt, which.
But we better not describe it. Just rub it up against the mics.
It's a shirt explaining. It has like this pegboard. The diagrams that psychos do or whatever, trying to connect all the possibilities and whatever.
You know what Brodor does.
Yeah, like they have all these like cards up that point from George Bush to the guy that tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan. And back to,
God damn it, that's real! It's real!
Back to Bill Gates and off Bill Gates to Dave Arneson. And it's like that, except it's a dog trying to figure out where the owner has gone. Like, because they walked out the door probably to go to a 7-Eleven or something, but it's all these catastrophic possibilities of where the owner's gone to. But no, you can tell you've hit a certain age when certain things no longer bother you to say. And among them is, my mom got me this. You know, you were just a certain age, like in your teens, maybe early 20s, you want to seem as independent as you can. And then when you get to where we're at, I literally just a couple of days ago turned middle-aged, so I'm now 45. And now suddenly it's like, it wasn't just a few days ago, like past 10 years of my life, it's like a good relationship with my family is something to be proud of, not something to try and hide. And so, I have a great relationship with my parents. My mom got me a shirt because she knows that, well, I'm the only person in the family that, at least in the St. Louis contingency, that has a... or contingent, rather, that has a dog. So she got me a dog-themed shirt. But, no, I am glad you're jealous of my shirt. I actually have something coming in for you that we'll talk about probably next episode because it won't come in. Well, it hasn't come in yet. But what we were going to talk about is Brodor and I are both kind of in gaming slumps, maybe for different reasons. For me, it's a fairly short reason. I don't think there's much to talk about. So I'll say what it is, but then we're going to bounce over to Brodor, which is, for me, it's the typical thing that always happens to us in the black hole of mid-October, early November through mid-January, which is all of the fall birthdays and holidays and people having school events and work events and whatever for Christmas and Thanksgiving and Halloween. And also, like, half my family was born in late October, early November. There is something going on constantly. So I'm not gaming right now. Like, my West Marches game hasn't met in a month, month and a half, and probably won't for another half month to a month. The actual play hasn't met in like a month and a half or 2 months now. Mm-hmm. And both of them left kind of mid-action, and I don't really remember what was occurring.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. There's nothing really to say there other than this time of year sucks for us. It always has. It's always the black hole where our games go to die. And I guess we'll see how that works out come mid-January. But Brodor, you're in a different kind of slump.
I am. I have not felt particularly motivated to create for the one role-playing game that I'm running. I haven't bailed on any games. I've continued to run, and I suck it up, and I get to the table, and I do the best that I can. And my players have said with sincerity that, you know, they've enjoyed the product that I've put forth for them, but I haven't been proud of it. I haven't been happy with it. It's been very hacky and slashy because I just haven't been motivated to focus on narrative or to tell a good story. I don't know. It just hasn't been there. I've just been floundering.
All right, let's start with the big diagnostic question. Why?
So I thought a lot about that. And I don't want to go off on a big solution right now, obviously, since we just started, you know, talking about the topic. But I think that it boils down to me and just grabbing something to make an analogy. Imagine you study martial arts and you've studied martial arts for many, many years and you have focused on judo and judo is all you've done. And you do judo and judo and judo and judo, and you know the katas, and you, everything to you is rote, right? And you can throw whomever regardless of their size, and you can trip whomever, and you can invert momentum, and you can do all of it. But then somebody's doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and you're like, well, that's different. This is a whole new thing. And now I'm getting my ass kicked. Mm. Right? Because I don't do jiu-jitsu. I do judo. So I think for me, I've been focusing so long on a particular style of game mastering. And I think that for me, I have lost interest in gaming in that fashion.
Mm.
Or at least I'm burned out.
This is going to sound really narcissistic.
Gaming in that fashion.
But it's an honest question. Have we corrupted you?
What do you mean?
Because it sounds like the type of games you've been running are fairly connect the dots sort of D&D kind of stuff. And within our group through the AP and whatnot, we do much higher character development, lower combat, much more experimental storytelling. Is that sort of waning your interest?
So no.
Okay. So
because I like f***ing the way I f***. Right.
Well, and apparently you don't. That's what I'm trying to understand is what changed.
So I guess what it is that for me, what was rewarding was the plotting of the thing. When I play a game like 3.5 D&D,
okay,
the mechanics, the crunch, all of that to me is very interesting. And
you also do a lot of like politics and history that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I do that too. But I guess I have some sort of corruption of the 80-20 rule where 80% of my production, my time, my effort into creating the game only goes toward that small portion that ends up being the combat encounter or the reason why we fight. Mm-hmm. And I guess I've lost focus on everything else going on in the world, and it's just made for some sort of uninteresting stuff that has just, it feels uninspired to me.
So I'm going to ask a question. Does it feel like it's been a while since you've had a really good session?
Yeah, now my players would disagree.
Right.
But for me, it's been a while since I've run a game session that I've walked away from and I've said, dude, that was great.
Because I can tell you, for me, when I start feeling like you're describing, that's the case. Where it's been a while since I've run a session I'm proud of. The players may tell me that they're happy with it and they're having fun. But if I don't feel like I've nailed it enough times in a row, I'm getting in my own head. I'm starting to feel that slump. Just recently, like in my D&D game, I don't usually run D&D. It's not the type of system I usually run. I'm running on Roll20. I don't usually do minis at all. I don't usually do a lot of prep from the standpoint of writing things and putting them out for handouts and some of that. And I'm finding I'm not doing a lot of that because it's not how I run games. And I set that expectation up for myself. So for my D&D game, I've been really disappointed in myself. The players have said they're having fun, but I go to each session. I had planned all of this much bigger thing, and I'm not delivering any of it. I went into this last session that I ran with the mindset of, I'm not hitting this. I'm striking out. I need to shake something up. And I didn't go into the session planning to shake anything up during the session. I was thinking afterwards, I'm going to think about this. I'm going to reach out and say, hey, do we need to use Roll20? Do we want to go straight to Discord? Do we want to have people start rolling their own dice at the table? Because people like rolling dice. I started thinking, what can I do to kind of shake it up? And then I went into the session and just had a blast. Mm-hmm. For the first time in a long time, I have this mindset of, I'm going to change everything. It's going to be good. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to get back to it. And then I just sat there outside of my own head, ran the session, and felt like it was one of the best sessions of that entire campaign. And for me, that's what I needed. I needed that little victory. I needed to feel like I nailed it. And then suddenly I was refreshed. And I didn't feel like I was in that slump like you're describing. I think that's what you need. You need a victory. Well, how to get that victory, I don't know.
Yeah,
because, but you need a victory.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But for me, I need to produce something that I think is worthwhile. And that is difficult because obviously, I mean, my own worst critic, like so many people. And lately, I just haven't produced something that I felt was worthwhile. So I did a lot of soul searching and just thinking about what I focus on and what's important to me in a game and where I'm finding my enjoyment. I guess I'd go through these phases where I'm just dissatisfied.
Yeah. You're going through the motions.
Yeah.
You may be putting the work in, but your heart isn't in it, and you're going through the motions because you don't want to disappoint the people that are coming to your game. And that's a feeling that I get. I don't want to disappoint these people. So even if I'm not feeling it, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to run it. And then I'm not going to be satisfied.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, and so one of the things that I've been doing recently for the last many, many sessions is I record my games. So I've got my cheap little $20 recording device and I set it on the table and everybody knows that I'm recording it and everyone knows that I'm not releasing it to the public. It's for my own edification. And I've been listening to myself. I started doing it for notes because I wanted to go back and listen to it at a higher speed and basically do a transcription, a basic bullet points of notes, so I don't have to keep notes during the game.
Oh, I love that, because that's one of the things I want to be keeping notes of what's going on, and I always feel like if I'm taking the time to do it, I'm not presenting my A game.
Well, and it f***s up your momentum.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, and so I don't want to dick up my momentum.
Okay,
so,
but how are those recordings making you feel when you listen to them?
So that's the thing, is that it really helped me to realize that the area where I should focus is description and dialogue and NPC character development, and that I spend so much time trying to be good at fights that there are other areas where I am lacking as a game master. And I also think that if I focus on trying to improve in those areas, it might rekindle some interest in the hobby and get me out of the slump. Like, for example, spent a lot of time building the last two combat encounters. In the last D&D game I ran on Friday night, we had two fights. And we had some RP in there and, you know, leading up to the fights and between the fights and after the fights and whatever. But there were two center point combat encounters. And I spent less time building those encounters in terms of stacking templates and feats and class levels and things onto the monsters, and more about why am I picking these monsters and what are the player characters going to do and what are their reactions going to be and how do the two combat encounters differ. And I realized that I spend a lot of time and effort number crunching and doing equation and building a thing mechanically, but all of the hours of work that go into that, each of those entities, each of those creatures is going to have very few actions in the encounter, right? And does the amount of labor that goes into building them justify the little bit of actual action economy that they're going to exercise?
The answer is no, absolutely not. Unless it makes you happy.
So
that's the only thing.
That is not sparking joy for him.
It does not spark joy, and then you must remove it from your life.
I don't think it makes me happy anymore.
And that's fine. Okay, so how long have we been doing this show, Dan?
15 and a half years.
15 and a half years, all right? Over those 15 and a half years, we have thousands of listeners, right? Thousands and thousands of listeners. And many of our listeners were there from the beginning or have picked it up later and have been with us for a long time.
Some of them weren't born yet.
Some of them weren't born yet. Some of their birth.
Our show is older than some of our listeners.
I just want to say thank you to Jeppy for not arresting me at Gamehole Con.
So
I'm not going to ask. Go on, Chad.
So the thing is, there are a couple of consistent things.
It was a joke.
There are a couple of consistent things that people tell us over the years, not about us, about like role playing games and their thoughts. Or, oh, well, you guys said this and this. This is what I think about this topic, or this is what I or on our different social media platforms or what forums, discords, whatever. There are some common things people say that they have said over the years that I think that we see that maybe they don't, because as individuals, they are having this thought for the first time or having these handful of thoughts for the first time. But because of our position, we see this sort of amalgamation. And what you're describing is one of those things that we see all the time since the day we started, is people who are longtime gamers, especially game masters, get sick of it. Now, not necessarily sick of running a game. Some do. But they get sick of some concept. So many times have I heard game masters say, you know what, when I first started gaming, love D&D, love the crunch, love Pathfinder, love whatever, love the crunch, love building these and kind of all the math and stuff. And I've been doing this for 20, 25, 30, 40, 45, 50, 60 years. I've been doing it for a long, long time. And you know what? The older I get, the less I fucking care about all of this math and numbers. I just don't care anymore. So many people say that, and they're like, man, I would never tell my group, but geez, I really love these new indie games because not because they're good or better, but because they're less work.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
It doesn't just go that way. I've seen
it goes the other way too.
I've seen people that have played a ton of indie games, you know, very story driven games. And they're like, you know what? I haven't done it in a while. I miss crunching some numbers.
Yeah. The point is not, the crunch is bad. Chad says crunch is bad.
No, it's not.
The point is, I think the vast majority of people who run games over a long period of time evolve. And they evolve away from something towards something.
Well, I would use a slightly different word than evolve. Not that I disagree with it, but I think the word that I would choose instead is that people diversify.
Right.
That which
they're exposed to more, especially in our age of internet, yeah, podcast and stuff,
because
they diversify their outlook.
There's an old joke about a broken syllogism that says, we have to do something. This is something. So we have to do this. You know, the house is on fire. We have to do something. So look up
cutting the end off, both ends off the ham.
See, I was just thinking about syllogism, and that's the company I would transport ejaculate from point A to point B. Syllogism.
Okay. But it's
bring me Brogor. Bring the loads home. Syllogism.
I think that for a lot of people, they have this understanding that gaming is this, whatever this may be to your group or to your gaming tradition. And eventually they get sick of this, once again, whatever this is. Oh, I grow
out of gaming. Well, you've been playing one game and one character for 20 years. And
therefore they say, so I'm sick of gaming.
Yeah, you're about 10 years behind schedule.
And it's like, no, it's just no different than saying, well, I'm sick of this book series or this author, therefore I'm done with all books.
Right.
That's nonsense. And the same thing's true of gaming. And there's a phrase that I hate because of its origin in pop psychology, but I think it is nonetheless a useful phrase, as much as it pains me. Like, I should be taking
rubber hits the road.
No. I should be taking a trauma for even saying this. Is Brodor, you need to give yourself permission to game a different way. To say,
no, you're right.
It's time. You know what? If I'm not enjoying this, this, and this, then fine. Gaming is so, or can be, so many more things.
I wish more people would do that for themselves, and not just with role-playing games.
You need a Marie Kondo of gaming.
There are people out there that I talk to frequently that get so into certain franchises of video games or role-playing games, and they have to have the newest one, and they haven't actually liked one in the last 10 years.
There's people,
but it's their series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has fun playing EverQuest. And I even played, and I'm telling you right now, it's becomes a weird addiction.
I played EverQuest for many hours and had minutes of fun.
Yeah, I think that's true of people who've played it for years. They've had minutes of fun. But, Brodor, I'm going to tell you something, and then let me back up and explain it. You're a terrible GM. And the reason I'm going to say something that ballsy is because for years we have said there's only one way to fail at gaming, which is to not have fun. And you're not having fun. Therefore,
you're not having fun in an aspect that is so major.
I'm not inspired. Like, I'm just, you're right. I don't know. I mean, I'm not unhappy.
But you're going through the motions. You're in a rut. You're going through the motions.
Yeah. So stop doing it.
Yeah. No, I can't.
No, think of it this way, though.
People can't stop. I love it. Right?
Like, well, no. This is abusive law.
Here's the thing. People look at, like, a hobby or a song or a movie or a book or a game or anything. They look at something and they're like, well, I like this. I've always liked it. Now I'm not happy about it. So now I hate it. Well, why does it have to be one or zero? Why can't there be a scale? No. Like, you love gaming. You love game mastering. You love game mastering your way.
I don't want to leave
But you don't leave gaming. You don't leave game mastering. You don't leave game mastering your way.
Right.
You alter. It's not a one or a zero.
Yeah. No.
It's
no.
It's a whole range.
No.
It's
with you. I. You know what? I'm tired of baking. I don't want to leave the kitchen.
Yeah.
Right. I just want to incorporate new cooking techniques.
Absolutely.
Into my repertoire.
So stop baking.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right.
So stop eating.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
We're going to burn the house down. That has the kitchen. I'm not going to eat anymore.
Don't leave the kitchen. Right. But if baking the same recipe is tiring, then don't bake it anymore.
And I think that because we were, you know, for the listener, the thing that you should understand is that we talked about this topic last week, and then we decided to not record last week, and we're going to do this week. And we had the opportunity to think about it, which, you know, normally I don't, but I did this time, right? So I started going through all of my books on being a better game master and game mastering tips and that sort of stuff.
Just copying us.
And ultimately what I came down to is that I don't want to stop game mastering. Yeah. I just want to try different techniques, different mechanics, different things that I am focusing on to find new passion.
You did you did Blades Against Darkness, and you said that you had a problem with it, not with just your understanding of the rules, but you said you had fun with it.
Oh, when I did Band of Blades.
I had a blast,
but yeah. I did have mechanical issues. And so that's what I was thinking about, too. I mean,
when you first started playing D&D way back in the day, did you understand the concept fully
to the point you had no?
It was a journey.
Yeah.
And the journey was fun, wasn't it?
It was new. And some of the mistakes that you made were exciting.
Right.
Right. Like I did this wrong and you know what? It was better.
But you don't have those anymore.
I don't, because I do it right all the time.
That's right. You've been doing you're too expert at it.
Yeah. Like I got in arguments with my players about, well, you could have done this and killed the whole party. I'm like, but that's not fun.
Right.
It's not interesting. Right. I mean, the chemistry of the encounter is what is fun. And so, sure, I could have used the Harpy's power a second time, knowing that most of you would have failed the will saves and you got lucky passing it the first time. But there's no magic anymore, right? I don't want to steal that victory from you. Mm-hmm. They did their trick. You defeated their trick. Now we move on to the next thing, even though we both know I could do that trick again and I could win. But winning is not the point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I guess this is just where I'm at, is that I spend all this time building an encounter that I could easily win by the rules, but that's not fun.
Right.
Holding them down and going, we both know I can win, but that's not fun.
So, you know,
what's fun is you winning.
You know how I was saying earlier, too, the example of what you're saying is we have heard this over the lifetime of our show, the sort of hive mind. I think you're potentially in a good place. You might tell me I'm wrong here. But what we usually hear this from is people who are like, I've been gaming, I've been doing D&D 2 for 20 years and blah, blah, blah with the same group. And they have a come to Jesus moment. And they're like, you know what? It is time to move on to something. I want to try something different. I want to not just build the stat blocker, do the thing that Marie Kondo of gaming is telling me is not bringing me joy anymore, and try something different. Well, but my group won't let me. My group only wants to play D&D. They only want me to run the... Do you have that problem? Would your group be willing to do other stuff?
I do not say many things that are in the positive
of tonight.
But if I said, I want to play Dogs in the Vineyard, and I post it, I just need to say, put the right words in the right... I could put a Dogs in the Vineyard. I could have a line of people out the goddamn door wanting to play playing Dogs in the Vineyards with me who've never gamed with me before, right? Like, I don't have...
Yeah.
I am very, very blessed in the opportunities that I have to game with people, right? So my group recognizes that I'm the belle of the ball, and that they're lucky to be on my f***ing dance card.
Yeah.
So they'll play what I want to play. But I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Two, I'm very lucky in that whatever way, and I guess I sound like such an
So no, I think
whatever I pick to play, they'll play.
Actually, I think I just detected. So we know what the problem is. So now we're like giving you suggestions on, you know, kind of paths you can take of it's okay to choose something different. And is your group going to stop you?
But that's outside of his comfort zone.
No. I think I've detected another blocker here that's a little bit more hidden.
Uh-oh.
You said, like, okay, if I put up Dogs in the Vineyard or whatever, you know, people out the door, I'm the bell of the ball, they're on my dance card and stuff. Then you said very quickly and moved on, I don't want to be that guy.
I was caught on that, too. What does that mean?
What it means is guilt.
I don't want to tell them, f*** you, this. I mean, okay, I do enough.
Even though they're down with it, it's acceptable, it's right.
Yeah.
It's everybody agrees with it.
What?
It's guilt.
Yeah.
It is guilt.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
I have games that I would be excited to run, but I know that the players wouldn't be, it's not the right group for it. And I would never come in and sit down and say, okay, here's what I'm running next.
I don't know. I got this group to agree to a Western, and that was pretty...
But what kind of fucking...
After they turned me down.
What kind of narcissistic monster am I that
you're
I
a game
sit
master
at the table
you'd
and go and go say, this is the game we're playing.
No.
And if you don't like it, there's the door.
Well, no, if you're the one who always has to run the games and carry that burden, then...
No, okay, so like...
I mean, why...
No, here's what you do. You come in with 3 game options, and none of them are D&D.
Yeah, I've done that too.
To
and it's not good enough.
Not to you, but to the audience. this is
to
my
the royal you.
To the royal you. Yes. we have advice for you. If you're a game master, you're at this point where it's like, okay, I need to do something different. If your group is one of these groups where you're the only game master, you're the belle of the ball, and they are resistant to change, that's when you come in and you say, okay, here's a list of games I need to change. Otherwise, I'm just going to not do this. Here's a list of games, which, like you said, that's where this sort of thing comes in. But if you're in a different situation where you have a more receptive group, or you have a group with multiple game masters, or groups that maybe they want to try new things, you say, I'm in this situation. I'm in a slump. I've got to move on from the. I got to try some other stuff here. What do we want to play? What are some stuff that you guys have seen out there that isn't this thing? Let's collaborate. Let's throw this together. You have to let go of the iron grip.
So if I can focus the advice portion of the episode a little bit.
Sure.
I don't want to stop playing this particular game.
Campaign. Yeah, you're in mid-stroke.
It's a D&D game. We're at 11th level. There's a lot of history in the game that we've established. I don't want to walk away from that. I just...
Can you pause it?
I can't do that. And okay. here's and
some
here's
people
why.
Can, some people can.
And here's the reason why I can't pause. If I put it down, I'm never coming back.
That's fair.
And I think that everybody at my table recognizes that. They could probably take a break. I could not.
I am one of those people. I don't believe I have the ability to come back to something.
Wes, is this kind of a sunk cost thing? Because... are you forcing yourself to finish eating your vegetables because you started?
No, I don't think so, because it is a project. It's a campaign setting. It's a thing in a game system that I have great passion for. I just haven't been inspired to write.
And he, as much as the players, wants to see how it all turns out anyway.
I'm invested, right? Like, so,
well, let me ask you this. If you continue... you know, at your current rate and pace and don't Marie Kondo it out of your life, how long do you think it has? How much longer do you think you'd have?
Well, so that, I mean, less than 6 months for sure, because because we're going to move, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing that I think that will help to provide some focus and potentially some inspiration is the fact that I know I have a limited time period, so there must be an end.
Can you... do a little bit of refocusing in the game of where you reduce the combat encounters, the math, the algebra, the stat block. Don't eliminate it, but you reduce the amount that's in there and kind of turn up the different levels of role playing or stuff.
You know what it is? I think that I can have the best of both worlds, because I think that what I can do is I can hit the brakes on the complexity of the combat encounters and just tailor things so that I can just pick ready-made monsters.
That's what I was about to say. All you have to do is reskin some things that are in the book.
Right.
And then let that take care of that part of the prep.
And spend the time focusing more on narrative and not feeling like, well, I have to build this exciting and interesting and challenging combat encounter and not focus so much on that. Because a lot of that stuff I end up was wasted effort.
Right.
But I lost my train of thought.
No, I think you got it. I think you nailed it. in all seriousness.
That was going to be my suggestion. Yeah. You don't have to walk away from the campaign or even the game, but you need to shake up what you're doing to make yourself happy. And maybe that is stop doing all the math and start putting in some slotted things. And
well, and I don't know for certain, but I think that it was a series of compounded factors. Mm. I mean, we had the issues that I had with Actor, and that is resolved. And now Actor's no longer in the game because he got married and moved, not because things didn't work out with us because they did. It's just that he's gone. And now because he's gone, the entire focus and interest of the game.
So as usual, instead of having the conversation, he just waited until the problem moved away.
This one, he's going to wait 6 months.
I did. It was amazing.
Exactly.
So that's an interesting story altogether, because a lot of that stuff actually smoothed out. It really, really did. It had a lot more to do with exterior tensions on both of us and far less to do with the game itself.
But that's true. He's abandoning us in 6 months. Why do we care about his problems?
Because
free content.
Yeah. Okay. No, because we both need this. We need to talk about how much we love each other and how much we love this hobby and how we're so fortunate to have bonded over this beautiful tribalism of game sharing and storytelling.
Yeah.
And then you're going to let us down and move away.
I know, exactly.
Well, I do wish you luck on your new adventure.
Thank you. Now, I mean, so here's
the thing. It's a big mistake.
The only thing that's going to keep me here is
what
a divorce.
Chad did was quote the HR email. What Wayne did was quote what the HR email actually means.
I'll tell you what. Well, whatever. That's neither here nor there. I'm going to go down an ugly road. But I guess after thinking it for the last week, thinking about the subject for the last week, I think for me, I need two things.
You need a win.
Well, I think I need three things. I need a win. I think I need to focus my preparation time on different things and not be so concerned about the mechanics, because this monster is going to get 3, maybe 4 turns the entire encounter. So why am I spending all this time to put together neat little tricks that
since they have all these monster manuals they wrote and paid a lot of money.
Yeah, they suck. They're not as good as I am. But
I mean, that's fair.
But no, I know it sounds like such a fucking dick, but
here comes that guilt again.
I feel guilty about it.
No. A lot of McDonald's. You
a lot of these monsters fucking suck, man, and they need work. But they need to be massaged.
No, they don't.
They need me to come and open their hood and get in the engine and work my goddamn magic and make them fun.
They don't suck. They're adequate to the cost.
You're right. They're not amazing.
Right.
And what I want is amazing. I want the players to look at the combat encounter and be like, holy shit, we did not expect that. I want my wife's character, who's giant-blooded and a large-sized creature, to see the huge, huge hills have eyes, backwards, gnarled, pustulant mutant giant men of the mountains, and see them in their 15-foot bases, and I want her to charge and hit that thing, and then I wanted to hit her with awesome blow and knock her back, but then also knock her prone so that when she stands up from prone she provokes an attack of opportunity, and then I hit her again and drop her character deep into the negatives.
Time out. How can you give us a bizarre street performance like that, and yet at the same time say you're no longer excited about that aspect of the game?
Because that street performance was fun and took 20 seconds.
Yeah.
The prep work for it took 3 hours.
I was about to say...
Chad's got me. He's got my fucking number. That's it.
I was about to say Brodor is like Dave Arneson in that he's what stands between Gary Gygax and you in terms of having a good game. But
holy shit. I feel bad for Lever that, because he is dead and I don't want him to come back and be unhappy with my laughter.
No, I just like saying things to stir the pot. Yeah. But I think instead,
that's what happens when we piss off Gygax.
I know, yeah, it's his spirit just wiped my mind.
I'm going to give you advice that's horrible advice for you.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to give you advice that's horrible advice for you, Brodor, that works for me. Go in and don't prep at all. Sit down with no prep for a session.
It's not terrible advice. That's how I run a game.
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not bad advice for you. It's not bad advice for me. It's not bad advice for Dan. Brodor's having a panic attack thinking about
it. You need to do it to liberate yourself.
I've literally had...
It's exposure therapy. All right.
I've had one panic attack in my entire life, and it was at the movie Split. I can't game without...
You know those hill giants with all the pustulence you're describing? Imagine this. They don't have hit points. You just decide when they've done enough damage and end it.
Yeah. Then it's Brodor. Not...
Oh, you guys are so good.
No, it's not equitable.
No idea how freeing it is.
You need to
sit down
it.
And do it.
Not because it's right. Not because it's fair.
All game masters.
Not because it's gamest.
If you don't think you can do it, that's why you need to do it.
Exactly. You need to do it just to liberate yourself.
Well,
your
now I didn't say I couldn't do it.
He'll just feel bad about it.
I'm, yeah. I will,
this is the
that's
addict.
Exactly it. I will feel shitty that I'm providing them an experience that is subpar because I didn't put in the effort.
That dude, that's not the effort. The effort's not in the prep. The effort's in the result.
Right.
The
remember, of my best sessions ever are the sessions I sat down for and I didn't have a chance to prep.
Game mastering is all smoke and mirrors. Everything is made up. Everything is a lie. It is all tools in the toolbox. Yeah.
Your players don't know you didn't prep.
And you need to do this, even if you don't keep doing it, just for the sake of understanding that a game can work despite this. It's do you know what exposure therapy is?
I do.
Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know what exposure therapy is.
I'm not letting you put your dick in my butt.
You're not scared of that. That's not the problem.
Right.
But exposure therapy, for anyone that doesn't know, is in psychology or psychotherapy when they're trying to deal with phobias or aversions. What they do is, like, let's say you're arachnophobic. You have a massive fear of spiders. They'll first start by, like, putting a picture of a spider across the room. And then the next session, put it closer to you. And then the next session, you have to hold it. And the next session, maybe there's a live spider in an aquarium across the room.
Then they put spiders in your underpants.
Yeah, and then eventually you come in and they just bombard you. Yeah. They just pull a lever, the ceiling opens up, and thousands of spiders fall on you.
It's like a crank.
Jokes aside, they slowly get you closer and closer until eventually you are holding someone's pet tarantula. And the point is, this is not a real-world skill, right? It's not like you need to go out of here and hold tarantulas. But the point of it is that it gets you to a place where when that tiny little size of a pencil eraser spider runs across the wall, you don't evacuate the block. You know, you can deal with it in a sane manner. And I found the exact same thing. As a notes-heavy, prep-heavy GM, though my prep wasn't on combat, it was more on plot outlines and dialogue and things like that, that I needed to run some games Chad-style and see them succeed so that I could unpucker and in future games, once again, that phrase I hate, give myself permission to run a more healthy and balanced game that I was enjoying, to actually put some flavoring agents on those nasty ass Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. And
you were able to create for yourself a tool for your GM toolbox that you did not previously have.
Precisely.
And that you had a blocker getting.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what
And that's what you need to do.
Exactly. And that's what I would recommend, but why I would recommend it is once you do it and see a great game come out of it, you're going to be like, huh.
Why was I doing all this work before?
Yeah, no kidding. I was hurting myself for something no one even cared about. It's the same sort of burnout people hit with their jobs. When they show up early every day and do 10 times as much work and then realize the guy who was just doing this one stupid thing ends up getting the attention and promotion. It's like, why was I doing all of this? Because it didn't matter. And it's that same sort of thing, as you've got to realize what actually does and doesn't matter. And where you're putting your prep, if it's draining your fun, I'm going to tell you straight up, it doesn't matter all that much.
Did you know what the secret is? You know what really matters? Your passion. And if you're not feeling your passion, then it's not going to work. If you can feel the passion without prepping, it's going to work.
Because it's a hobby.
No.
And it's friends. And it's your friend sharing a hobby. And you're having fun. No matter how much you hate your group. And you just rain spiders on them all the time.
I'm going to give you the final word. We're going to wrap this one up.
Wait. He's got some.
I know. That's why I said I'm going to give him the final word. Because holiday season, the shorter these episodes are, the more likely I'm actually going to get them out. So, Brodor, I'm going to give you final word here.
It's more than just hobby, though, right? I'm going to put it how B. David Walters put it at his interview seminar at GameHoleCon. Everyone is equal in time. And I'm spending my time, but also my passion. It's art. It's a thing that I love.
I hate that you gave him the last word because I so vehemently disagree.
Same
with
here.
Yeah.
I know.
It creates...
Because time is not the only currency being spent at that table.
It creates a relationship that is mercantile based.
Well, yes. Yeah.
And that's
not love, that's commerce.
Time does not equal quality.
Yeah.
Well, hold on a second. My point is
I spend my time making this and you don't. How dare you?
Well, no, hold on a second. Let me finish. People have then taken their precious time to spend on my art
And if you're lucky, they remember their character sheet.
Yeah. And that's their problem, because if they weren't here doing this, they'd be at home drinking whiskey or smoking pot or both.
I disagree with
you. And
you
know what? I love them for that. But
these people got off their asses. They drove to my house to sit down and come to me and be entertained.
So
I have an obligation.
No,
to entertain.
No, there are no obligations in gaming.
Well, but
it is friendship and fun.
I disagree with you.
Let me ask you a question.
It is performance art that we are sharing, and it is indeed work.
But is the performance that you're gauging yourself off of the performance that they care about?
Am I gauging the wrong metric? Probably.
That's my
no argument there.
Okay.
Now, Chad and I can disagree, but you're probably right. I'm measuring the wrong thing.
The problem is you're equating the time you're spending preparing to the amount of fun you're presenting, and those are not the same thing.
Yeah.
You can present.
I think you would be shocked by what you can succeed at, and B, the things your group does and doesn't care about. I guarantee you. Detailed monster block stats, if we assume a zero-sum game, and in game A you have detailed monster stat blocks, and that's all you have, and in game B you have colorful NPCs and shittily designed monsters, the average group is going to enjoy game B more than game A. Yes, there are going to be exceptions. Save yourself the email. I know those groups exist, but I'm just saying.
I don't know.
This is amazing.
Think of it this way, too. Like our Blades in the Dark game. You really complimented me, and I loved it, by the way. My egotistical little heart was pounding when you were giving me such high praise on the combat that I ran at the police.
It was awesome!
13. How many stat blocks did I have?
Zero.
And what was the state of my notes?
Zero.
Yeah.
Minimal.
I had a note card.
I think you had like two words on it.
I had a note card I handed to Brandon, and I think he wrote train on it and handed it back to me.
You know what it is? I'm so scared of doing it wrong.
I do it wrong constantly. The wrongness frees me. It is failing. Why do we fall, Master Bruce? I mean, it is the failing and then the reaching up and succeeding. And guess what? You're smart. You're intelligent. You're creative. Did you guys not hear
people like me?
Did you guys not hear his description of the pustulating hill giants going after? Yeah. That was fucking amazing.
The stats wouldn't matter.
I'm in. Yeah.
But the stats do matter. The fact that they have 126 hit points and they're plus 19 to hit / plus 14 to hit, and they do 3d8 plus 15. All of those things matter.
You just came up with off the top of your head without prep.
No, I studied those. I know those numbers. They're in my brain.
And it's good.
I know them.
It's good.
And I can tell you, even though I haven't played Battletech probably like in a decade, that the 3025 Orion violates FASA / Catalyst's own design rules because it has a ton and a half of SRM4 ammo, which is not supposed to be possible in the game. You study something or stare at something long enough, you remember it.
Thing.
I didn't have to prep to give you that stat off the top of my
head. Here's the thing. You had this amazing combat with all these stat blocks and numbers and stuff. And just from that little 20-second description, it was amazing. I loved it. I was there in that moment. I saw your wife's giantess getting pounded. It was good, right? The passion
when she goes down, she's like, take off a hit point on her action.
The assault on precinct, the assault on precinct 13, where you guys murdered the shit out of that tall boy operator. How many hit points did he have? Now, Blades in the Dark, like there's clocks and there's mechanics and there's stuff. Now there's no hit points or stats or stuff, but it does have.
You didn't even
decide
the size of the clock until we'd been beating it up for a bit, and then you're like, "Oh, it's a 6 o'clock," and because of what Brandon and Eric did, we'll start with two filled on the 6 o'clock. That could have been an 8 o'clock, a 12 o'clock, or a 4 o'clock, or
a 2 o'clock. I feel like a charlatan.
And you know what?
You're not a charlatan. You're an entertainer.
And you know why it ended? You know why I was able to fairly say in a just and equitable manner that they had won? Because I believe it was Eric and Wayne did something awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
What I mean, that cool draw. Oh my God, I can see it. Just Wayne character coming up.
It moves with quick motion. Can I just slowly stab it?
No.
Or it was a snap of neck.
You walk up behind it. And the Eric comes out of the shadow cloak, stabs it, is like, hi, stabs it. And then your character comes up behind it. I break his neck so he's looking at me. Hi. Loved it. All loved right. it.
I think we're in this one here.
You're good. You're a good game master.
Yeah.
It's just about tools, and you apply yourself to any one of those tools. You, Mike Brodeur, will do phenomenally well.
You're punishing yourself for things no one else is punishing you for.
God, you know what? That's, I mean, talk about my life.
So, thank you guys for tuning in.
And that's not a tool in the toolbox.
Have a great week and great game, and we will catch you next time.
All Game Masters cheat.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2021. Listeners are free to use this episode in a non-commercial endeavor, so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. If you wish to support this show and its related endeavors, you can do so at patreon.com/feartheboot.